I want to ask you a question that you kind of touched on for a hot second. Sure. You kind of buried the lead a little bit. Sure. You said you were a sex worker.
Yeah.
Do tell.
When I was in high school, I started my own business, essentially, working as a high-end escort.
God bless entrepreneurs in this country.
Yeah, I did it. I was 17 to start. And this is what happened. I started when I was 17.
You were interning.
I lied.
Interning.
everybody that I slept with thought I was 21. But the community, one of the other women, actually, that I did reference checking with, because the way that I would set up an appointment is I, you know, I worked with this online, basically it's like a message board. This was back in like 2003, 2004, somewhere in there. So I'd need people to email me their full name, where they worked, and two industry references. So we're two other women that they've successfully seen and presumably not killed or robbed or done something weird with. Then I would call them, I call his office, and then I do an ID check at the door. So it all felt, which is more than I've ever done for a one-night stand situation.
Ironically.
Right, yeah, isn't it funny? The only horrific PTSD, trauma-inducing sex that I've had has been in the context of a committed, long-term relationship with somebody I loved very much. The community found out that I was underage and they blacklisted me until I was 18, and then I needed to prove to one of the other girls that I was 18, showed her my driver's license, and they welcomed me back into the community. And I worked for about a year and a half in North Carolina, and then I quit when I went to college, and that was it.
Can we point out, by the way, good girl escorts, like, they're like, you're underage, come back, we'll embrace you when you're back.
Yeah, it's true. Kind of like
them being responsible.
Well, they understood that I posed a risk to the community.
Yeah.
Because, like, prostitution's
a misdemeanor.
You get busted,
they're all going to get.
But an underage escort, that's like 9 felonies.
Just ask Lawrence Taylor. Big Giants fan. What made you decide to want to start your own escort business at the young age of 17?
I mean, it always turned me on. Like, as I said, when I first started masturbating, like, commanding the attention of a lot of different men has been an ongoing part of my sexual fantasy. I have a great relationship with my dad. I mean, maybe that, you know what I mean?
No, I'm not being a dick. I'm genuinely asking.
I don't know what daddy.
I don't know.
My father is human and flawed. I don't know.
But, you know, like, that argument is often made when people think of, like, the sex worker or stripper or whatever, and they're like, daddy issues.
I didn't have a drug habit to support.
Father loves you.
My father loves
me.
He was around when I was a kid. Except
didn't touch you.
No history of sexual abuse. I mean, I have mommy issues. Like, my mother and I are both in therapy trying to work on our relationship.
Cute conservatives. Oh, that must be it. That's got to be the reason.
Right. I mean, like, I think on the spectrum of, like, humanity, I feel pretty, I didn't feel exploited.
You can say, not fucked up.
Right.
This
is something I did. This is who I am.
Instead of fighting it.
I did not feel exploited because, like, there was no pimp madam character. I ran my own business. I had full agency the whole time. And there was never an experience during that incident where I was like, oh, fuck, this is going to scar me forever. Now, it's had more than zero impact. I think the thing that I would probably say to my 17 or 18-year-old self that I wish I'd been more aware of is, like, look, you're going to spend a lot of time naked in bed with people that have contempt for their life partner, that have contempt for their wife, that have a belief system around what it means to be married that isn't necessarily healthy or representative of, like, what it means. So I've feared being that woman in long-term relationships. But again, I don't think comparing me and my sexual hang-ups or my, like, intimacy issues to other women in their 20s, I don't feel outside the norm. I think that there are just a lot of women my age that are dealing with, like, intimacy issues or questioning whether or not we want to be in a committed relationship and what that means. I feel like
Your role in the gender role?
Yeah, what is our role?
Yeah,
you know,
I
feel like our whole generation is sort of asking that question.
Did you have any... I want to know, first, so many questions. You are amazing with this.
Oh, thanks.
did you ever, what's the best client story you have? Like, a client, you're like, holy shit, you know, the guy who works down the street for me in the grocery store, you were looking for a whore, do you know who this is?
Oh, you know what I mean, escort.
Whatever.
Oh, whatever.
Have you ever had
I didn't take an ad out in the yellow pages. I know. You know, like right.
Hi, I'm looking for
the
a date.
Are, whores actually how it goes. Don't get paid.
You're the expert, dude. I don't know about buying that. But anyway, if you have like an expert, like, when you're an escort, did you ever have someone call and go, and then you're like, oh, I know this motherfucker?
I don't feel comfortable telling that story.
You don't have to give names. You can just say, like, the relationship.
Yeah.
That happened, though.
No, it wasn't. I never encountered anybody as an escort that I knew from my real life. Like, Raleigh, North Carolina is not a small town, you know?
Right.
Did you look different, or you looked the same?
No, I pretty much looked the same. Yeah. I mean, I have a picture of myself that I used to send out to people.
What about that? Because, like, as you're marketing yourself, I mean, was that a
early
little
headshots,
scary?
Interesting.
Yeah, but I, again, and that's probably some of my, like, age-appropriate black and white thinking along the lines of, like, you know, at 17 or 18 years old, I wasn't really thinking about the consequences.
How did you even think of that, though, at that age?
I've been like, fantasizing about it for a really long time.
But, like from a business aspect, like, I think about myself at 17. I think about other people at 17. Like, they didn't even know how to, like, be a good babysitter business.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, just from a business
aspect. It's not
aspect,
even close.
Like,
sort of 17 or 18, I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, then wasn't there was like, that babysitter chain that, like...
No, but you know what I mean? Like, she's got a much better head on her shoulders at 17 than I probably do now as far as, like, business. Like, I need to, we're going to do some industry referencing. I need to know where you work so I can just call and make sure that you work there.
The way that it would work is that, you know, I get all that information, and the first thing that I would do is call the company that the person supposedly worked
at. But, like,
at.
How did you even come to know that that's how your business model...
I went to the message board. So I Googled, like, Escort Raleigh, and I found this message board. And then I went to the FAQ. I read the frequently asked questions, and it was geared towards clients of, like, here's what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and one of the things they were like, don't hesitate to give your information. These women are out for their protection. There's a culture of not anonymity, but, like, discretion. There's a culture of discretion.
Yeah.
So, like, unless you do something weird, like, the likelihood of her calling
yeah,
your
you're
boss
not there to,
is like
yeah.
it's very low.
How
so.
Did you offer protection for yourself?
I would before I was 18, and so I you can't get your own hotel room until you're 18.
Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So before I was 17, I would do quote out call only. So I'd need them to get the hotel
they
room.
They host, yeah.
Right, they hosted, and then with a couple of regulars, I'd offer them like a $50 discount if they got the hotel, and then I would use the hotel for the rest of the afternoon. Like, so I'd meet them earlier in the day. But what I'd do is when a new client would contact me, I needed their name, where they worked, and two references. I'd call where they worked, and I'd ask to speak to them. If the person said, we don't know what you're talking about, that person doesn't work here, I'd hang up, our relationship is over. Like, I'm never emailing that person again.
Mm-hmm.
Would you tell them, like, this isn't going to happen because you lied to me, or just,
no,
you don't,
no, it's not worth
nothing.
It. Yeah,
okay.
Just nothing.
Okay.
I'll get into the other thing later, because then you open a dialogue, and it's like...
Right,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I knew better. And also the volume of interest
Christ
that I was getting.
I know.
I'm amazed.
Did that mean not to feed a troll at 17?
The
like,
volume of interest that I was getting,
yeah.
like, I was looking for reasons to say no to people.
Yeah.
So then somebody would, then the next, and if they said, oh yeah, it's sure, I'll transfer you, then I would just
hang up, yeah.
So then the next thing I would do is I'd contact both references. I only needed to get in touch with one. And there was a real culture within the women of, like, looking out for each other. That was not a weird thing.
Yeah.
So I'd usually, you know, I'd check in with her. She would go back through her email and say, yeah, so, like, nothing popped up in my head of this person being...
So you never took a newbie?
Yeah, never. And if somebody who was like, oh, I'm new, but I really want to see you, I'd recommend that they go through an agency, because agencies invest more. They have, like, background check stuff, and they can do other stuff
right.
that I didn't want to invest in.
Or they might
in.
Have, like a bodyguard. They might have someone, like, to help.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, they have a different level of infrastructure that, because they deal with newer people.
Right.
I was like, go to an agency first, and that'll be your reference. I'll just, you know,
yeah.
we've had
yeah,
this
yeah,
email
yeah.
exchange, so...
What about one of the lines of, like, personal protection? Like, I mean, like, did you ever pack a gun or a knife or a spray?
Sure. So when I walked into the hotel room, the first thing I would do is check their photo ID. And then with their ID in my hand, I pull my cell phone out and I call somebody. I call my best friend. I call my own voicemail. I call, you know, whatever. And I'd say, hey, you know, this is my stage name. I'm here with their full fucking name. I'll call you in about an hour. And then I'd hang up. So that person now knows that somebody knows where I am, who I'm with, and what time I'm expected to be anywhere. And that was, that felt like enough for me. You know, like, sure, if somebody wants to strangle me and they're going to, you know, go and not strangle two other escorts and then meet me and then strangle me and just hope that, like, the person that I called doesn't know what to do in the situation. Yeah. I mean, like, it's just, it's a, it, it feels like a level of risk where I feel like my animal, I mean, I said no to a lot of people, but, it may, you know, my animal instincts.
It's actually more dangerous to just go home with the guy.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. And again, like, I've been in an, my ex-fiance was abusive. And part of his narrative was, you know, once a whore, always a whore. You've done this unacceptable thing. I'm gonna punish you for that. There's something fucked up about you. And so, like, that was part of his narrative. And he was physically and verbally abusive to me. And, like, I feared for my life many times with him. But, like, he met my parents. I knew his real name. Like, I've had a ring on my finger. Like, that was a deeply committed, monogamous relationship with someone I loved. It didn't protect me at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you feel, sorry, do no, you feel, and again, I ask this more just to actually hopefully tear down some stereotypes, but sure. I think some people might make the argument that because you were a sex worker that you put up with being in an abusive relationship because you thought less of yourself because of that past.
I mean, that was definitely the, here's what I learned from that relationship. His abuse, after that relationship, I will never sleep with anybody again who doesn't know about my history beforehand because it's just too dangerous. Uh-huh. So now when I, you know, when I'm sleeping with somebody new, one of the things that I, like, full
new
disclosure.
How fast you're gonna have you drop a relationship? That bomb.
Pretty early, like first or second date. I want people to be fully, want fully informed fair. Consent just because it's literally too dangerous. Right. Because you drop that information on a guy after you've had sex, and I learned how unpredictable or volatile that can be. Yeah. With him, he was just gonna be abusive.
Right.
But that abuse came out way earlier because I challenged his whole paradigm, like his whole understanding of what men and women are.
Yeah. She's a self-respecting whore? I don't get it. Right. Doesn't compute. Explodes.
And he worked really, really hard to do that. It's one of the reasons why I started doing this material, like on stage and on podcasts and stuff, is I sort of want to tell other people, like, there's nothing that you've done that makes you unlovable. Mm-hmm. Period. There's nothing that you've done that makes you
oh, right. I don't know about
challenge
that.
Challenge accepted.
But we all know that this isn't it.
Right, yeah. So,
I know some assholes.
He's trying to preach some self-love. Give him a break.
He tried to make me feel ashamed about a thing, and he succeeded for about half of our relationship. But I would say that all kinds of people get into abusive relationships for all kinds of reasons. If I hadn't had the history that I had, I think that I would probably be in the middle of rural Ireland getting the shit beaten out of me with two kids. I think that it would have happened slower, and I think that I would have been more sucked into, like, his world. But I feel like I feel like my history sort of saved my life because it triggered him into a bunch of unacceptable behavior really early, which was, and it all happening all at once was what made me leave. But if
How
it happened slower
breakup?
Over time, bad. Yeah.
Like
Irish, so it's like an Irish guy.
I'm
pretty
alcoholic.
Sure they're known for their good temperament and very
right.
understanding and accepting values.
Yeah,
in Irish.
Yeah.
like to talk in broad strokes.
Boarding school, rural Ireland.
Oh.
What I mean, did it go so far as a restraining order?
No, but I moved.
Yeah,
yeah, because we were in the same neighborhood. That's how we met at a local bar. But yeah, I never got a lot of my stuff back.
Oh, fuck it.
Yeah, like, it was just... I genuinely feared for my life the week leading up to me leaving and the months afterwards. In fact, I ran into him on the street
That's a terrible feeling,
4 months after we broke up. I used to get... I'm feeling it now.
Yeah.
Like, anxious, like, nauseated, sort of cold sweat stuff just walking near his apartment. Like, anywhere in that area. But I was walking down the street with a friend of mine, and he was clearly drunk. And he ran up to the guy that I was with, who was just a friend, but that's not a thing that happens in his world.
Right, men and women are not friends. Exactly right. That's not possible. Exactly right.
He grabbed him by the shoulders, and he pointed to me and he said, "That woman's a fucking whore, like a prostitute," and then ran away. But my knees were shaky.
I feel like that's just another thing that, you know, it's the whole idea of kind of taking back stuff, right? And people talk mm-hmm. about it with language. For example, you know, we're going to take back the N word. We're going to take back the F word or whatever.
The B word.
And I feel like, you know, you're now like controlling it too, where you're like, you know what? I'm open about who I am. I'm open about my history. Therefore, if something like that happens, I have control because my friend knows who I am. My friend knows about me, and you look like an asshole, and you're not telling this person anything that they don't know, but I've controlled it. I've done it at a point where they've been given enough time to know me in the sense that they know that I am a good person, but they also have a full picture of who I am, and I'm in control.
Yes, and that was one of the things that was so frustrating for him is I really refuse to allow myself to be isolated in that way. One of the things that he really wanted me to do was
you
to just
keep it.
You didn't want
to live secret. Don't be a secret.
Secret, quiet,
Your dirty little secret.
Right, but also the secret of our relationship dynamic. But I was doing comedy, so like one of the jokes is like it's really easy for comics to get into abusive relationships because we're always like yes and.
That's improv.
That's a nice insider joke.
But that's offensive, Caitlin.
Right, but you know, you'd say things like, you know, you're airing our private things, and that's I've walked away from a lot of belief systems to live the life that I've chosen to live, and one of them is that you know, don't air your dirty laundry.
Don't
like I'm a fucking comedian, and like part of that is putting a lot of things out there, and what I've received is this world of acceptance and understanding. If you make yourself vulnerable to people, their impulse isn't to judge you or to reject you.
And oftentimes it's you know, it resonates. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't think, you know, comics talk about things that are real things in other people's lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they don't want to admit it, or maybe it makes for an awkward car ride home. But, you know, the whole point of comedy is to connect with your audience. Mm-hmm. So more than likely what we're saying on stage connects, and it connects because people are doing it, saying it, thinking it, feeling it. They just, you know, they can. And the whole, you know, situation with women on stage and having that kind of power, I mean, it's really hard.
It was
for
deeply threatening.
Very threatening.
But I talk about sex stuff, and for him that felt like I was asking for it, and that it made his job as my protector that much harder.
Because you're obviously a whore up there saying, "Look at this microphone near my mouth. Exactly. I just want a cock in my mouth."
If he would have thought of that problem, imagine when you had five dicks in your face months later.
Right. So, I mean, definitely part of my internal monologue during that moment is I've proven my ex-fiancé right, you know. But the other part of me knows that, like, as an adult, I've never cheated on somebody when I was in a monogamous relationship. But when I'm single, I conduct myself differently. And I think that's fair and reasonable and doesn't... I mean, I've embraced the word whore to a certain extent, but I think one of the things that I really loved about escorting was the honesty of it. What I hate is like girlfriends of mine who have real power dynamic differences with the men that they date because they're constantly in this game of manipulating the person that they're dating into buying them something that they want or supporting them in something. And you know, when you charge by the hour, a lot of that bullshit goes away, and a lot of the bullshit becomes more apparent in like long term, because I've been in relationships with men that have made more money than me that were really sort of expecting kind of an escorty dynamic.
Yeah, they bought
you. And it's a weird thing having explicitly done that and been in that world to sort of call that out in a relationship. It's interesting. I'm looking for authenticity. That's what I want. I want to be able... I believe that real freedom comes from either nobody knowing anything or everybody knowing everything. You know, I feel like I'm in this unblackmailable situation, and I want to lead an authentic and interesting life with real relationships that I've built with people that I really respect. And I feel like I'm on course, on glide path to do that. And I don't think the number of dicks that I've sucked is the best metric to decide whether
or
not I'm a good person.
How many dicks have you sucked?
Thousands, probably.
In a row. in a row. Hey, hey, you.
I'm 36.
We're doing a Clerks quote here.
Clerks.
Huh. I have three questions here I want to follow up with you on, and then I think it's going to be time to kind of wrap it up. I tell you, that's a hell of an admission. That's very interesting stuff.
By the way, you know his podcast is called Man Whore, so he's also embracing
it. When you say embracing whore, I was like, fight on, sister.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I feel like anybody whose number one dating question to decide whether or not the woman they're dating is marriage material is, what's your number?
Never
that
matters.
Guy's not for me.
Yeah,
like never we're matters. Never right. We're never gonna be awesome together. Totally. Period.
Yeah. Number one, how many of your sessions with clients turn out to just be pure talk sessions?
Anybody who works in the sex industry, I think, will tell you this. I've talked to a lot of, you know, because I perform and I talk about the stuff. So women will often come up to me and reveal their own history. I'd say about 20-30% of the guys that I worked with either had pretty severe erectile dysfunction or like some other physical thing like diabetes or some other ailment. And a lot of those, like I remember one widower, in particular who just wanted to, who just wanted to like have that skin to skin contact because there was nobody in his life that he was physically intimate with. He wanted that skin to skin contact and he wanted to like tell me stories that other people had gotten tired of hearing that and feel connected in that way. And he didn't want to have sex out of respect for his deceased wife, which is like something I didn't really understand, but it's something that I respected. I had one guy come back from Afghanistan who was, we did have sex, but his reasoning was very interesting to me. And it was a unique situation. He had just started dating a girl here in the U.S. He'd been back on, you know, I don't know how many months he'd been stateside, but he was really, he had a lot of performance anxiety because he hadn't been with anybody since going to fucking war.
And I was gonna say, so it was a PTSD kind
he
of
was
factor.
Having yeah. he was having PTSD and he was nervous that he would be in that physical moment. So he hired me and we did an hour session and he told me what was up. But he, you know, we had sex, to give him like confidence mm-hmm. that he could go and have sex with this woman for the first time, without having all of that baggage or, you know, weirdness or whatever it was. It was really interesting.
So it's kind of like the whole Helen Hunt film. Yeah. I forgot. Was that called the session?
The session.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, she nailed it. When she talks about the difference between an escort and a sex therapist is that an escort wants you to keep coming back. And a sex therapist wants you to develop the tools that you need. Physical therapist. Yeah. Is that the difference between a masseur and a physical therapist? A masseur wants to keep you coming back.
She looked fucking fantastic in that film, too. I always had a thing for her.
It was an amazing movie that I think blows a lot of expectations about what that dynamic is out of the water. I, as an escort, as a sex worker, I'll tell you that I was the professional in the room. And I always felt in charge. Like, it was my boundary setting, it was my workspace, it was my rules, because the power dynamic between escorts and clients, I'm the one that has their real name. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I can make a Googleable thing about them. I can blacklist them from the community. It's a weird power dynamic.
How many of you guys did you blacklist percentage from your base?
I blacklisted one guy temporarily for a misunderstanding in paid time
was
versus...
Was that a thumb up the butt?
No. Yeah, no.
Chinese finger cuff.
We always had explicit permission. No, he was a little bit confused about what our dynamic was and thought what I thought was a session was just two friends hanging out. He thought it was just two friends hanging out because that was the phrasing that he used. But I figured that because we'd had previous, like, that he understood what the rules were. So when he didn't pay me, I said, that's not okay. And he said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, that's going to be really hard for you to get an appointment. And then when he made it right, I made it right. And then I had one guy who was doing some... Stalker isn't quite the right word. Really what it was...
Real enthusiastic?
He was a voyeur. And so what he was doing is he would book an appointment... And then he would show up hours early and just say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm rushing in between. Just give me the room number and I'll come back when blah, 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 blah. And I was like, and so you'd give him the room number because he's a regular. And then he would see somebody else come in and sit outside your door. And so he was doing that. And when I discovered that, I gut checked with a couple of other women and they reported the similar behavior.
So he was like listening, and
he was listening, and then not showing, and then not showing up for his appointment that he booked. Mm. So it was like, so there are a couple of bad things happening.
Yeah, well, there's like a lack of consent there. There's a lack of payment,
right?
And it's just invasion of privacy. Like if it was like he was maybe giving you like a little bit less to be like, can I just like pay to like be outside the door?
Even I mean, if he was a voyeur, like I also had another.
Why not just
there's hotel security in this. That's what I don't know.
I also had another.
But maybe it was
right. It's also a red flag to the hotel, like that you don't want to invite any problems as an escort. Like you know, you don't want any noise complaints. You don't want anything. Yeah. You don't want any cleanup complaints. So there were other clients that I had that if approached the right way probably would have been okay with like wink wink nudge nudge, you'll never see him. Is it cool if there's a guy in the closet? Like I could have arranged that. Mm. I could have made all of that happen. Yeah. But instead he tried to go around. So I did check it with a couple of other women before, but blacklisting somebody is a pretty like that's a pretty extreme thing to do. So and those were the only two times that I did it.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
Last one. I don't know if I caught this or not, and if I did, forgive me. Why did you quit?
I went to college.
That's it. Yeah.
I didn't work in college, and then I came back for Thanksgiving break, and I had a couple of appointments with regulars, and it just like after a year and a half, like I had a fantasy to fulfill, and I did that, but like I never needed the money. I made a commitment to myself never to do it for the money, which has been
so hard.
That's gonna be really hard. Making $400 an hour before I had a high school diploma to not being able to make. I had a woman offer me $10 an hour the other day to do data entry for her. Like,
honey, I was getting fucking slammed
it's
for
just,
$400.
Because as soon as you start doing it for the money, you kind of like are relying on it. It's harder.
It's a dynamic I don't want to invite into my life. Me and my therapist have talked about this a lot. Like, it's not something that I'm ashamed of, but it is.
No, but then it's controlling you instead of you controlling it.
Yeah, and it does change the way that you think about sex. And I don't know if I really want to do that. But it's been really, really hard. As a stand-up comedian needing money, the day job situation is a fucking nightmare. Mm-hmm. I've worked as a barista, which felt I cleaned up homeless person poop for $9 an hour working at fucking Starbucks, having to be there at 6 a.m., cutting my fingers on things. Like working as a waitress, I felt more exploited in almost every other job that I've ever had.
Oh my god, exactly right.
It's a nightmare, and no one's talking about it. But all of the things that people are like, oh, it must have been this, it must have been that. I was like, no. I mean, working for other people has been a living hell, but like this was, it wasn't that bad. But even hearing myself talk now, it's difficult for me to fully articulate why I don't want to go back to it. I just know.
Is that you don't want to tie your sexuality to money?
Yeah.
See,
money corrupts everything it touches. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I know for me, like, I almost, like, kind of fetishize money. So, like, it's kind of a fantasy, like, a fantasy for me. I feel like I talked to you about this.
You tell me.
It would be, like, kind of a fantasy to be, like, to the ultimate getting used just, like, as, like, for someone's pleasure is when, like, you've actually now assigned a dollar amount. And I'm sure that's something to do with my father and relationship with money from then. But, like, that I feel like that's, you know, that would be super hot to me. But then, like, yeah, you don't want to fuck up, like, your other regular sex. You know, you don't want to, like, kind of be tied in.
Yeah.
I get that.
We get it. Wow.
Holy shit.
Fascinating, if nothing else.
Oh, my God.
Fascinating.
Probably the best episode we've ever had, right?
I would say so.
Great.
My Lord, you've been a bastion of information.
Both of you.
And experience, absolutely. Both of you is right. Well, let's go to everyone's favorite part, the plug party. Well, we got Caitlin. We got Caitlin ready. Tomorrow.
When is this coming out?
Well, we air it in thirds, so that way we try and have some for the listeners, all 44 of them. Every week, so I'll probably listen to it.
Do a few out in January.
Yeah, you have anything?
Middle
of January.
Right. How about you guys go first? I gotta grab my book.
Sorry. Do you have any appointments, though? No, just kidding.
Monica, go first.
Billy, proceed. Where are you gonna be?
Let's see. Well, I've got a podcast. Because hey, who doesn't have a podcast, right?
Yeah, damn right.
I have a show where every week I actually chat with like women I've hooked up with and dated about sex, dating, and sexuality. It's called The Man Whore Podcast: A Sex Positive Quest for Love. You can find it on iTunes. It's free out there. The Man Whore Podcast. Otherwise, if you follow me on Twitter at TheBillyPresida, you'll find all any like shows I'm doing that I'm promoting and such. Yeah.
Are you ready with your ledger?
Yeah. Oh, she's got quite the book.
You can, first of all, you can listen to me every week on Race Wars podcast, which is through Stand Up New York Labs with Kurt Metzger and Sherrod Small. So that's a podcast. I'm doing Relationship on January 10th, which is actually a podcast where I'll be discussing with a professional therapist on stage my hang-ups of coming out about my sexual history with my parents. So right. If that was your burning question, then you can listen to me do that. I'll be doing a storytelling show January 12th called Foreplay, and you can see me at Stand Up New York, LOL, or clubs all over the city. Just check my website, CaitlinBailey.com, and follow me on Twitter, Caitlin Bailey.
Right on.
Yeah.
Monica Vita.
Oh my goodness. So I've got a lot going on in January.
Humble bragging.
I know, it's crazy. I have a big show on the 16th. I believe that's Friday of Martin Luther King weekend. Mm. And it's called Men All Pause or Menopause. It's an all-female lineup. Don't say it, Kevin Goatee. It's going to be fucking phenomenal. It's going to be hilarious. Some great female comics. And also that show benefits Boom Health, which is a charity that offers health services. So definitely check that out. I've got my HKL Hugs, Kisses, Laughs show at Gotham.
Good show.
On the 20th, Gotham, 8 p.m. I'm also working with Keith Furstenberg and Henry Cruz, the month of Monica, as they dubbed it. So, you know what? Follow me at Mocha Vida, MOKAVIDA. I will post all of this stuff, but I'm doing their shows January 3rd and 11th and just on the 28th. So, month of Monica. That's never going to happen again where I'm going to have that much stuff going on.
Oh, my Lord. I'm going to be at the stand in 2 hours from now. Yippee's Kai, yay. Yay. Tomorrow, I'll be doing that Sunday, the, I don't know the fuck day it is, 30th? I don't even know. At Jonesy Corona show. What's that called? On the Lower East Side. I don't even know. Who gives a shit? It's a bar show. And then I'll be Atlantic City on Monday. And then after that, like I said, I'll be out around the city. Broadway, LOL. And never comedy cell. Never the comedy cell. Don't worry about that. You'll never find me there yet. You got a while to go before that.
I know. That's
but yeah, I'll be actually shooting a film in January. Yay.
Whoa.
It's a short. Nick Lytle.
Ooh.
Oh, nice. So looking forward to that. And I don't know. Stay tuned. We'll put more dates out there as we cut the episodes and blah, 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 blah.
Follow us at Safe Word.
Safe Word Podcast. Yeah, Safe Word PC at Twitter. Kevin Goatee, GOOTEE at on Twitter. And Mocha Vita, MOKA Vita at Twitter. And that's right, kids. Walter Conkright, your ass is off tonight. Happy New Year. And always remember to ask permission before entering anyone at a sex party.
Or that's anywhere,
it.
Really.
Fair point, Blue Pursuit. Thanks a lot, guys. We really appreciate it. Love you all.
Out.